Well, government is very concerned about what we eat and so is enacting all kinds of laws, like the Food Safety Modernization Act, to restrict what we may put into our mouths. But government does not appear to be concerned about what we put onto our skin. And so we spend about $6 billion every year glopping on over about 10,500 chemicals, all in the effort to look good. But those chemicals lead us to ask, which is better for healthy skin, cosmetics or food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 707th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in St. Petersport who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Folks, if you're going to bring Nikki James into your holiday party to sing karaoke, I suggest you bring about 16 fire extinguishers with you because you're going to need them to cool down the room. Well, it's true. We are now spending over $6 billion every year to slather cosmetics containing over 10,500 chemicals onto our skin in order to, well, look good. Listen to some of the delightful yummies we are slathering on. BHA, BHT, P-phenylene, diamine, is that right? Cocamide DEA and loramide DEA, dibutylfolates, DM hydrotonin, and on. But hey, according to a variety of sources, including Environmental Working Group's Skin Deep database, these chemicals may cause cancer, deteriorate the brain, disrupt reproductive functions, and harm fish and wildlife. These possibilities lead us to ask, which is best for healthy skin, cosmetics or food? And who better to ask than compounding and confounding pharmacist Ben Fuchs? Ben, are you there?
Can you hear me, Michael?
Gotcha, you sound good.
Did you say confounding
pharmacist? Yes, I did. I have to tell.
I am going to steal that from you. That's very clever.
First of all, what is a compounding pharmacist?
Compounding pharmacist is a pharmacist who actually makes the medicine. And today, there's a lot of compounding pharmacists out there. As a matter of fact, even Walgreens and Kmart and your standard pill popping pharmacies have a compounder or a compounding section or a compounding division. Mm-hmm. But when I started doing pharmacy, 24 years ago, I graduated pharmacy school. Nobody really ever heard of a compounding pharmacy, but my background in pharmacy school was in skincare and was in making skincare products. I worked for Blistex company while I was a pharmacy student and got my internship hours working with the guy who invented Blistex, actually, and I was one of his research assistants. There was a couple of us, and my job was literally to make formulas, to create products. They were his formulas, but my job was to actually put them together. And so I learned a lot about skincare ingredients. I learned a lot about skincare product formulation. I learned a lot about the skin and about the lips.
So now I have to tell them about the confounding part before we go any farther, because I heard pharmacist Ben, the compounding pharmacist, talking about skincare, and he was talking about the importance of consuming bone tea. And the audience sat there awestruck. But here's a pharmacist talking about bone tea, and thus my notion that he is a confounding pharmacist
one. Yeah, I am a confounding pharmacist. I never liked the idea of drugs. In pharmacy school, it always troubled me that we studied more about side effects than we studied about effects. We studied about toxicities and poisonous and the toxic and poisonous nature of these substances that we were using to heal the body. And not only that, we were studying diseases as if they were nutritional deficiencies. And it turns out that what we call disease is nothing more than the body's manifestation of some kind of problem either absorbing nutrients or obtaining nutrients. So I was very troubled by the notion of pharmacy, and indeed I found pharmacy to be very confounding. It's like, why would you take a poison if you're already sick? Why would you dose yourself with something that's going to stress out your body and tox out your body's metabolic system when you're already got a metabolic problem? So I like that. That's a very clever way to put it, Michael. confounding pharmacist.
Well, then you feel free to use it. My first big question for you today, Pharmacist Ben, is why is the government so concerned about what we put into our bodies but not on our bodies?
Well, the government is not concerned with anything that has to do with you, and you want to be very clear about that. The government is there to maintain – the reason we have government is to keep business moving. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad thing necessarily because I'm in business and I appreciate anything that keeps business flowing and keeps our economy, at least for now, moving in a healthy manner. It doesn't seem to be moving in such a healthy manner. But the role of government is to make sure that goods can get bought and sold. So what they're trying to do is make sure that people feel comfortable and safe buying their products, not because they love me and you, Michael Olson. The government doesn't love me and you. They want to make sure that we feel comfortable and safe buying the crap. So anything they can get away with in terms of allowing or not allowing, they'll get away with. In other words, if it's cheaper for a company to put BHA or BHT than it is to put vitamin E in a product and nobody knows the difference, the government's fine with that. If people start making a squawk and they don't buy the product anymore, then the government will step in and make BHA and BHT illegal. So we have to get this idea out of our heads that the government cares about me and you, Michael. It doesn't. It has economic interests, which are good, not a bad thing, but we just want to understand that they're not our friends. They're necessarily taking care of us and have our best interests in mind as individuals.
Unless, of course, we are of sufficient size to be able to contribute generously to their reelection.
Yes.
Then they're
in
our
favor. Not the individual. That's not me and you.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm sorry.
So when we put things...
Michael, let me just say one thing. You're cutting out. I'm on the Skype here, and so if I step over you, I know sometimes it's awkward for the listeners to hear. It's only because I'm having a problem hearing you. You're cutting out a little bit.
Okay.
So
well, I'm not cutting out. I'm fine.
Oh, no. I'm on my end. I guess I'm cutting out.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, we'll just kind of proceed slowly and go the best we can here. And if we have trouble, just call in the phone number, and you know, I'm sure you know what the on-air line is here, so you could do that. Should be noted that Pharmacist Ben and I both share the same mothership out of Santa Cruz here, so we have become well acquainted with each other over the last few years. And
Michael, it's an honor to be well acquainted with you because you do tremendous, tremendous work, and you're a very, very elegant radio man, I have to say. And I've been doing radio for a long time.
Thank you, Ben. When we put things on top of our skin, do they stay on top of our skin? I mean, when we apply...
I'm so sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Okay, when we apply cosmetics and do the...
That's a good question. That's a very good question. Let me explain this. There's a myth. There's a lot of mythology in the world of healthcare. There's a lot of bad ideas. There's a lot of wrong ideas in the world of healthcare. And nowhere are these wrong ideas more evident than in skincare. The misunderstanding in skincare are rampant. And that's because our skincare technologies are really based on an understanding of the skin that's, get this, Michael Olson, 16 centuries old. The cosmetic products that we use today were developed by Galen, the Roman physician, Greek-Roman physician. In that area, in the Mediterranean area, around the year 300 or 400, and he developed the skincare products that we use today. So our technologies
and
our understandings. I'm not kidding you. He was the guy who invented the emulsion, the cream, the cosmetic cream, and today's skincare products are really derivatives of Galen's emulsion that he came up with in the year 300 or 400. Okay, now Galen was a wonderful physician for the times, incredible, visionary, but God love Galen, he didn't have electron microscopes and he didn't really understand what's in the skin, but our technology, but consumer products and our ways of manipulating the skin from a consumer basis have really not advanced much in the last 16 centuries, even though our understanding of the skin has. So as far as that very important question you just asked, do things get absorbed through the skin? There's a myth out there that says that whatever you put on the skin gets absorbed. Well, let me disabuse everybody out there of that idea right now. Okay, now, everybody who's listening to this should understand it is not true that whatever you put on the skin gets absorbed. You see, in pharmacy school, we get 4 semesters, 2 full years of something called pharmaceutics, which is the study of how to get things through the skin into the body. It is a technique, it's a science, and it's an art as well to bypass this surface, the dead cells on the surface. They're collectively referred to as the stratum corneum, which means hard layer. And this hard layer, the stratum corneum, is designed by nature to be a barrier. So it is very difficult to bypass this barrier, and there are literally volumes and volumes and tomes of literature, 1,000-page tomes. I have them in my pharmacy, with studies and with techniques and with scientific descriptions of how to get through the stratum corneum so you can get into the body through the skin. Most people know, I'm sure, that there are transdermal medicines. There's scopolamine patches, for example. If you were to go on a cruise and have motion sickness, they put a little patch in the back of your ear that transmits scopolamine through the skin. There are nicotine patches, and there are pain patches. We have birth control patches today. All of these utilize this technology that is very, very high, very, very scientific and very, very detailed and intricate of how to bypass the stratum corneum. So it is not an easy matter to get into the body through the stratum corneum. Please do not fall for that nonsense that says whatever you put on your skin gets through into the stratum corneum, or gets through the stratum corneum into the body.
Okay,
now,
we're going to have to
that
pick...
having been said, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Can you hold that notion?
Sure.
We're going to have to take a quick break. Can you hear the music?
I cannot hear the music.
Okay, good. Well, then the music is up, so it's time for us to take a quick break. We're talking about skin and food for the skin. Is it better to consume cosmetics or food for healthy skin? With pharmacist Ben Fuchs and you, right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, we're back with pharmacist Ben Fuchs. We're talking about what's best for healthy skin. Is it cosmetics or is it food? Ben is a compounding pharmacist, which means he knows how to put elements and chemicals together to make a drug. And he's also a confounding pharmacist because he comes up with these strange notions like bone tea. So, pharmacist Ben, quick question. If it's hard to get drugs through our skin, is it okay then to apply things like sodium hydroxymethyl cyanide glycate?
No. These are the three criteria for delivery through the stratum corneum. Okay, and do you understand? Am I cool saying the stratum corneum?
Yeah, makes sense? I gotcha.
Okay, good. So there's layers to the skin. The very surface is a crusty, hard layer that is designed to be a barrier. Primarily, by the way, the barrier is to water. That's the primary role of that surface, is to keep water in and to keep water out. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're 70% water. God forbid you should have a third-degree burn and go into the hospital. You don't die from the burn. You die from dehydration because the water evaporates through the opening.
So we're kind of like water balloons.
We are basically water sloshing around somehow in some hydraulic system that's designed to keep everything in place. So the stratum corneum is an effective barrier. However, like, as you said, or as this article says, and as you've been talking about for the first few minutes of the show, you still have to respect what you put on the skin. There's three criteria to delivery through the stratum corneum. Number one, the material has to have a sort of fatty nature. In chemistry, we say lipo for fat, lipophilic. Lipophilic means fat-loving. And so the material has to have a certain fatty nature to it. The second criteria is that the material has to have a degree of familiarity. It has to have a chemical structure that the body recognizes or the skin recognizes. And the third criteria, and this is very important, is the concentration of the material is critical. So how concentrated what you're putting on is very important. If you have a 0.001% concentration of something, that's not going to penetrate as something if you have a 10% concentration. In chemistry, we say that's driving. We call that driving through, pushing it through the stratum corneum. So the more you put on of a material that's fatty and familiar, the more dangerous it is. The reason these products are called the Dirty Dozen, many of them, not all of them, is because they meet these three criteria, or I should say they meet two of the three criteria, and the place where you have an opportunity to manipulate how much is going in and out is by the concentration, how much you put on. So if you'll notice, the biggest problems, if you're a chemist anyway, what you'll notice with the biggest problem with ingredients that are problematic are they have a chemical structure that is similar to chemicals that are already in the body. So they can mimic the body's inherent chemicals, and specifically, they mimic something called hormones. They mimic messenger chemicals. Hormones are chemicals that act as messengers. They're information transfer chemicals. And these things that are problematic for the skin tend to be mimics or imitators, mm-hmm. Copies of hormones. They're very similar to these messenger molecules. They can throw off the messaging system.
So they're kind of like...
throw off the messaging system in the body.
They're kind of like camouflage then, aren't they? They're kind of like camouflage.
They're camouflage. Exactly. That's exactly what they are. And they can get into the information schemata, if you will, the blueprints of information transfer, how cells communicate with each other, and monkey up the information. When you monkey with information in cells, oftentimes you get mutations. And this is the big problem with some of these chemicals. They initiate mutations. However, because the stratum corneum is so effective as a barrier, this does not happen unless you monkey with the concentration, unless you put a lot of material on your skin, which is why I tell people, put as little stuff on your skin as possible and make sure what you're putting on the skin is as friendly as possible. And that's why the line of products that I developed, it's called Sanitas, which by the way means good health in Latin, is not like any skincare products anywhere, and it makes my products a very tough sell because what they are is simply vehicles for delivering nutrients into the skin. And that's how we want to treat skincare. Skincare products should not be waxes.
So you're talking about feeding the skin nutrients?
Feeding the skin, exactly, topically. Skincare today, modern skincare, 21st century skincare, which is what I'm attempting to do, and it's a tough sell, Michael Olson, believe me, because I'm going against billions of dollars of marketing that wants to perpetuate the old way of doing business. And what I'm trying to tell people is you do not want to slather anything on your skin. You want to think about what you're putting on your skin. And it's great that you have 12 or 15 or 20, actually the dirty dozen, so you have 12 dirty dozen ingredients here. But Michael and listeners, you don't want to be slathering anything on your skin. You want to be putting as little on your skin as possible, and you want to be emphasizing things that your skin can actually utilize and work with. So, for example, if you go into some of these department stores and you get a skincare product, I'm going to tell you something. I'm a formulator, and I'm going to tell you something. The products you get at department store are almost exactly the same as you get at Walgreens or that you get at CVS with just a little fancier box. And I'm telling you this as a formulator. I'm not telling you this as some, as Oprah or some somebody who just does a talk show. I'm telling you this as a chemist and as a formulator. The products you buy for $120 an ounce are almost exactly the same as you're spending for $20 an ounce. The entire business is filled, the skincare business, is filled with ingredients, and, or I should say products, that are based on ingredients that are simply waxes and vehicles with a little bit of pixie dust thrown into them. What I'm telling you is use the pixie dust, get just the pixie dust, and put a tiny little bit on your skin. And by pixie dust, I'm talking vitamin C, I'm talking vitamin A, and those are the two most important ingredients for your skin, and then perhaps a little bit of other vitamins and some other things we could talk about later. You don't want perfumes on your skin. You don't want preservatives on your skin. And by the way, the perfumes are the worst ingredients in the whole list.
Those are the nasty ingredients.
You can almost taste them in your mouth sometimes.
Do you ever put
a skincare product?
That is one of the things that is mentioned in the list of the 12 Dirty Dozen is parfum.
They're the worst. Now, some of these things on the Dirty Dozen are not as problematic as you would think, and that's why I object to a lot of people who write skincare articles like this, and I have a problem with whoever wrote this article that you sent me or that I've been looking up, because not all of these are as problematic as others. For example, sodium lauryl sulfate. Have you heard a lot about sodium lauryl sulfate? It's been in the news lately.
I haven't heard anything about it.
Okay, well, you're a guy. You probably don't even use skincare products. But in the skincare world, sodium lauryl sulfate has gotten a lot of bad press because somebody has started a multi-level company and a marketing company, and he put a lot of silliness about sodium lauryl sulfate out there. And to this day, people don't want to use sodium lauryl sulfate. Well, let me tell you something. Sodium lauryl sulfate isn't anywhere near as bad as some of these other ingredients. Another one is parabens. Parabens aren't anywhere near as bad as some of these other ingredients. I don't know if you've heard about the hullabaloo that's out there about parabens. Perfumes, those are nasty. Those you want to stay away from.
If something has a scent, avoid it.
Essential oils are a little bit different.
Oh, okay.
Essential oils have a scent. They're not they're not tremendously great either. They have some medicinal properties that you want to be respectful of, but they're not as toxic as the perfumes. The perfumes, and by the way, women are spraying perfumes directly on their bodies. With that, not in the skincare products, they're spraying them directly on their bodies. Those things are, I don't care if you like the smell, great. That's all well and good that you like the smell, but guess what? When you spray a perfume on your skin, it meets all of the criteria for transdermal penetration. Ooh. It's highly concentrated, it is fat soluble, and or it's lipophilic, and the chemical structure is familiar. So perfumes are very well bypass the stratum corneum very effectively, and as I was saying earlier, you can almost taste them in your mouth. After you put a perfume on your skin, if you put enough of it on your skin, you will taste it in your mouth.
Wow, and that it's like shooting yourself with a scent bullet.
Basically, and it's going right into your system.
Goes right into your body then.
I wouldn't be using any perfume. If you do use a perfume, wash it off when you don't need it, and use as little bit of it as possible. So those things you really want to be careful of.
So these things, when they get into your body, they can actually cause the mutations.
Yes.
In your body, and the mutations, isn't that where cancer comes from?
That's where cancer comes from. Now, there's never been any definitive studies, but based on the chemistry, you can sort of extrapolate what's going to happen. Now, you have a system in your body, which obviously everybody's heard of, the hormone system in the body, and the hormone system is technically referred to as the endocrine system. And so the endocrine system is the system that is most affected by these molecules. The endocrine system, the hormone system, the messenger system. And in fact, these molecules are very often referred to as endocrine disruptors.
Ah.
And I'll tell you some of the worst ingredients, the most endocrine disrupting ingredients that in the whole formulary.
Well, wait a minute. I want you to hold that because we have to take a quick break. And that'll be a perfect reason for people to listen. For what comes back after the break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with the confounding pharmacist, Ben Fuchs, and we're talking skincare and you. You can join us, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Well, what do you think is best for healthy skin, cosmetics or food? That's the question on the table today, and the person we have helping us answer that question is pharmacist Ben Fuchs, a compounding pharmacist in that he can put things together and make drugs, and he's also a confounding pharmacist because, boy, he's sure confounding the established order of things, and that's what we're up to today. And speaking of disrupting, what about those endocrine disruptors that we must be careful of, Ben?
Right. So you get the idea that you don't want to be messing around with the hormone system, and disruption of the endocrine system is problematic. Now, among the worst chemicals, and arguably the single worst thing that we put on our skin, which it meets all the criteria for transdermal penetration, and that is, remember, lipophilicity, fat solubility, oil solubility. Number two, familiarity, chemical structure that's familiar and recognizable. And number three, concentration. The worst ingredients that meet all these three criteria and that are highly endocrine disrupting and toxic and deadly, if you were to drink them, you would die, are, you ready for this, Michael?
Ready.
Sunscreen chemicals.
Oh.
The worst. And every time I see an idiot skincare professional tell somebody to slather on the sunscreen, I want to jump through the TV and strangle somebody because they are the worst, nastiest ingredients you could ever put on your skin, especially on your baby's skin. And kids have much thinner skin, so what you put on your child's skin is even more significant than what you put on your skin. You want to put as little sunscreen on your skin as possible, and you want to wash it off when you don't need it, when you're not wearing it. You never want to use a product that has a sunscreen built into it. How do you like this for confounding the established idea?
I guess so.
Right? So now, I'm making a distinction here between a sunblock and a sunscreen. Sunblock chemicals are not, they don't fall into this category. I'm talking about sunscreen chemicals, and they go by, have really high long technical names like octyl methoxycinnamide and homosalcate and octocrylene and these non-pronounceable long terms, but you'll always see them on a sunscreen product under the listing active ingredients.
Wow.
And if you see a listing under active ingredients that's got a certain two or three different sunscreens, those are things you want to either avoid entirely, or if you're going to burn and you never want to burn. So if you need them, you need them. You wear them when you're out in the sun, and you remove them when they're off, and you use as little of them as possible. Mm-hmm. And what you've been saying in the program, and we haven't been talking about yet, and I want to get to this, Michael, is the best way to protect your skin from the sun, the best way to make sure you have great skin, is not topically. It's what you eat.
Okay, before we go there, and we want to go there next, a caller asked for a quick question. What about retinol? What is retinol?
Retinol is absolutely critical for healthy skin. In fact, the two most important ingredients for the skin, if you're stranded on a desert island, is actually three. The three most important ingredients for your skin, if you're stranded on a desert island, you can only bring three ingredients. This is what you want to bring. Number one, you want to bring some kind of alpha hydroxy acid, which is very stimulating for the skin. Number two, you want to bring vitamin C, and these are topically, vitamin C in its fatty lipophilic form. And number three, you want to bring vitamin A. And retinol is a very, very effective form of vitamin A. Everybody past the age of 28 should be putting topical retinol on their skin if they're interested in anti-aging. Retinol and fatty vitamin C meet all our criteria for penetration through the stratum corneum, but because they're already in the skin, and because your skin has mechanisms for utilizing these substances as nutrients and using them to drive and increase chemical reactions, especially around anti-aging molecules, when you put retinol on your skin, when you put topical vitamin C on your skin, it is extremely well handled, almost to the point, not almost, literally to the point where it's actually stored in the skin as a reservoir. So it supports your all the vitamin A that you're eating, some of it's going to your skin anyway, and vitamin C. But when you put it topically, you get a reservoir, a storage of that vitamin A and vitamin C where it can serve to perform biochemical functions and protective functions as well. Retinol is the most effective, the most powerful form of vitamin A that's available over the counter. Retinoic acid is the most powerful form of vitamin A, and that you need a prescription for. However, retinol and retinoic acid are stimulating. And if your skin is not prepared, and most people's skin, if they haven't been taking care of it, and most people have not been taking care of their skin properly, if you haven't been taking care of your skin properly, you have to be very careful with anything that's stimulating on the skin. Not that you don't want to do it, but you want to be respectful of it. It's like when you go to the gym. If you've been abusing your body all your life and you go to the gym, you're not going to start off by lifting 400 pounds.
What happens to your skin if you apply retinol?
Overstimulation.
Can it cause your skin to break out and things?
Not necessarily break out, but rashes, irritation, redness, discomfort. You don't want to overstimulate. You want to stimulate, but not overstimulate. In fact, you want to be right to the edge, push that envelope as much as possible without going over the edge. And that is sort of a technique that you have to understand. You have to listen to your skin. So you want to use it, but you don't want to overuse it. You want to take days off, and you want to get your skin to the point where it's strong enough to be able to handle a certain amount of stimulation. But the best way, Michael, to make sure your skin is strong enough to handle stimulation, to protect your skin from the sun, is to take care of your internal nutrition, especially around the digestive system. The digestive system and the skin are intimately linked, and a digestive problem will show up on the skin faster than you can imagine. It will happen quickly.
How does it manifest itself?
Rashes, allergies, acne. Eczema, psoriasis, broken skin, thinning skin, many different ways. It's as many different ways as there are people. But if you have some problem with the skin, the first thing you want to look at is your digestive system. And by the way, I have been doing this for 27 years, Michael, and I have yet to see a case of sensitive skin. I have yet to see a case of rosacea. I have yet to see a case of eczema. I have yet to see a case of psoriasis that does not have a digestive component. No skin should ever have sensitivity. Nobody should have sensitive skin. If you have sensitive skin, ladies and gentlemen, you want to backtrack that to the digestive system. If you have rosacea, you want to backtrack that to the digestive system. And also, just like no skin should be sensitive, no skin should ever be dry. If you have dry skin, it has nothing to do with your moisturizer, and it doesn't mean you need a new moisturizer. It means you have a problem absorbing nutrients, or you're not giving yourself the correct nutrients. No skin should be sensitive. No skin should be dry. How many people do you know have dry skin, Michael?
Well, I don't know. But I think you really answered my question with respect to what's best for healthy skin, cosmetics or food. It seems to be like we're heading down the road of food, right?
Internal. Clearly,
so it's what we eat, Michael, that really makes a difference.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I gotcha. Go ahead.
The It's like icing on a cake, okay? You want to think of your internal nutrition as the cake. You want to think of topical skincare as icing on the cake. If you have a really good cake, Michael, you know, you almost don't even need the icing. You eat the cake, it tastes great. And then you put the icing on it, it beautifies the cake. It enhances the cake. It makes it even better. That's the role of topical skincare. It's to support the cake, to support the nutrition, the meat, the bulk of it. Icing is topical skincare has a supportive role, like icing has a supportive role. But on the other hand, if you have a crappy cake, right, and then you put icing on top of your crappy cake, guess what? You still have a crappy cake with icing on top of it. And if you eat it, it's still going to taste like a crappy cake. So if you're trying to take care of your skin with icing, with topical skincare, but you got a crappy cake, it's like biting into a crappy cake with icing. Why would you put moisturizer on top of your crappy skin? Now you got crappy skin with moisturizer on it. Congratulations. Are you happy?
You're all slathered up. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking with pharmacist, compounding and confounding pharmacist Ben Fuchs about skin care. What's best for healthy skin, or cosmetics or food? We seem to be heading down the food road, so when we get back, we're going to talk about what foods are best, how we balance our digestive system so that we have good skin, and you're invited to participate. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. Got to move fast because Ben is fast. Right back. Well, we're tracking this all down to the digestive system. It seems, how could a digestive system be related to skin? But that's the assertion of confounding pharmacist Ben Fuchs. How does that work, Ben?
You like saying that, don't you?
I do.
Okay. Hey, when you're a fetus in the womb, a tube is formed within a couple of weeks, a month or so of conception, actually a little bit longer than that. A tube is formed, and that becomes your digestive system. Within days, the cells of that tube flip over and become your skin. And from that point forward, your skin and your digestive system are linked like two peas in a pod. They're made up of the same cell type. They're both called epithelial cells. Your skin and your digestive system are both epithelial tissue. And epithelial tissue has an absorptive nature. It eats. Your skin absorbs things and eats underneath the stratum corneum, and your digestive system absorbs and eats as well. So you want to begin to understand that your skin and your digestive system are intimately connected. So what you eat is going to have a large role to play on your skin's health. In fact, the primary role to play in your skin's health, for better or for worse. So if you have a skin issue, whatever it is, it could be something as mild as dry skin. And by the way, Michael, this is extremely important for everybody to recognize. Dry skin and rashy skin and rosacea and problems with eczema or psoriasis or any skin issue is not a cosmetic problem. It is not a superficial problem. It is a marker of biochemical breakdown that's accelerating your demise. So something that seems as superficial as dry skin is really a marker that you're accelerating your rate of aging and increasing your likelihood for cancer, for heart disease, for all kinds of degenerative disorders. Something as simple as dry skin. So we want to recognize that our skin problems are not cosmetic. They're not just for appearance. They are markers of what's happening inside the body, and we want to use our skin as a detector, as a signal, as a marker of what's going on inside our bodies. So if you have any skin issue.
So if we have a skin issue, then we know there's something wrong with our digestive system. How do we address the digestive system
eating, usually with your digestive system or what you're eating, it could be something else as well. It could be your liver. It could be a lot of things. But usually the first thing you want to focus on are the most likely culprits, and that is, yes, indeed, the digestive system. So patching up the digestive system is very, very important.
How do we start?
Well, there's a lot of places to start. Bone soup, for one, Michael.
Right.
You know why I like bone soup? Let me tell you about bone soup. And let's talk about bone soup and the skin. Bone soup's got a lot of wonderful health benefits. But for the skin, anything that you put in your body that's rich in nutrients and easy to absorb, it's almost like the reverse of the problem. Remember how I said the problem was when things are easy to absorb and they're very concentrated, they're problematic? Well, you can use that to your advantage. If something is very easy to absorb and it's highly concentrated, but it's good for you, that too is going to get into the system very rapidly, and bone soup is just that. Bone soup is very dense and concentrated with nutrients that are extremely important for skin health, and because it's liquid, because they're liquid, they're very easy for the digestive system to handle. So you get a highly concentrated source of super friendly skin nutrients, specifically some substances that are called proteoglycans. Proteo for protein, glycans for sugar. And these proteoglycans, these protein-sugar combinations, are tremendously important for stimulating skin cell growth, for protecting your skin from the environment, especially protecting your skin from the sun, and for supporting moisture factors. So you get these wonderful skin moisturizers, internal skin moisturizers that help your skin grow, that help collagen grow and proteins grow to protect you from wrinkling, and on top of everything else, they're wonderful for supporting your skin's immunity, for fighting the environment, including the sun. And by the way, I should tell you one other thing. Remember how we said how sunscreens are really problematic ingredient? Well, the best way to protect yourself from the sun, Michael, and by the way, I know you're going to love this, what lives in the sun and thrives in the sun and never gets skin cancer?
Plants.
Exactly, right? So how is it the plants have evolved? What do plants have in them that allows them to just be out in the sun all day long and not shrivel up, not die, but actually thrive in the sun? What is it? What do they have in them? Well,
chlorophyll.
What they have in them, chlorophyll, molecules like chlorophyll, exactly. They have pigments, the reds, the greens, the blues, the oranges. All of these pigments have a remarkable biochemical quantum ability to take photonic energy, that is sun energy, and manipulate it and tweak it to protect the plant from the sun. We call them phytonutrients. We call them antioxidants. We call them pigments. Well, the beautiful thing, Michael, is when you eat those pigments, when you eat those antioxidants, when you eat those phytonutrients, they go into your digestive system, they go into your blood, and they get stored in your skin to protect you from the sun. That's how the divine force designed humanity to be protected from the sun. Not to be slathering nasty, deadly, toxic sunscreen chemicals on top of our skin, but to be eating our antioxidants, to be eating our plant materials, to be eating our vegetables, and then the nutrients go into your skin to protect you from the sun. If we would eat our veggies, we wouldn't have as much problem with skin cancer, and we wouldn't need our sunscreens. Yes, sir.
What about the pH of the digestive system?
That's a very important point. Most people, as we get older, we don't produce as much stomach acid as we should. And under conditions of deficiencies in stomach acid, the technical term is achlorhydria or hypochlorhydria, which means low stomach acid or no stomach acid, we do not break up our nutrients as effectively. And even more critical when it comes to breaking up and utilizing nutrients is not the pH, although that's very critical. But even more important than that, is malabsorption of fatty substances. Many of the things that are skin protective in plants, many of the nutrients that we need for our skin, tend to be fatty. And when we don't absorb our fats, which happens as we get older, or it happens if you have intestinal problems, if you have Crohn's disease, or if you have any kind of intestinal issues, you're going to have malabsorption of fats.
Okay, you got to hold that right back. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with pharmacist Ben Fuchs, and you do stay tuned. Well, we're back. Pharmacist Ben Fuchs, how do we address the malabsorption of fats in our digestive system?
Okay, well, first of all, the most likely culprits for malabsorption of fats, and fats are absorbed in the small intestine. Some of the fatty vitamins are absorbed in the large intestine. But the biggest problem associated with malabsorption is intolerance to dairy and intolerance to grains. Many people have intolerance to these substances that are subclinical. That is, they're not bad enough that they need surgery, or they're not bad enough that they need some kind of medical intervention, but they're bad enough that it's compromising their ability to absorb fatty substances. So the first thing you want to do if you have any kind of malabsorption issue is you want to address any food allergies, especially the biggest culprits are grain and dairy, and there's a cross-reactivity so that many people who are allergic to grains are also allergic to dairy. You know what, Michael? You're better off just not even dealing with dairy and grains. This is the way I look at it.
Wow.
Don't eat don't even mess around with dairy and grains. There's no real need for them. If you're going to do the grains, at least do the germ part of the grain. Try to stay away from the processed part, the endosperm, which is where all the sugars are, as I'm sure you probably talked about many times on this program. But if you don't want to take any chances, you could do without grains. There's other ways to get the stuff that you need. So first and foremost, avoid substances that compromise absorption in the intestine, and that is most likely grains and dairy. Secondly, make sure you're on a good probiotic, good bacteria supplement. There's many out there. I like the Youngevity ones, the FloraFX if you're using Youngevity, but there's a lot of them out there. Get on a good probiotic supplement. And here's a very important point, Mike, a very important point. Do not tolerate any digestive problems. Do not say, oh, I just have a little heartburn. Oh, I just have a little gas. Oh, I just have once in a while. Oh, my digestion's pretty much okay. Your digestion should be 100% okay. If it's 99% okay, you want to know what is causing that 1% problem. We have set the bar so low in terms of our standards on health that it's compromising our longevity and it's affecting everything we do and it's especially affecting our skin. So do not tolerate any digestive problems, correct them, treat them as a sign that something is wrong in your biochemistry.
Okay.
Thirdly, if you have any digestive problems, get yourself on glutamine, which is like a Band-Aid for your intestines. It patches up leaks, helps patch up leaks, and get yourself on a good digestive enzyme and a good digestive acid supplement. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, quickly, three most important foods to eat for healthy skin.
As long as your absorption is okay, I'm assuming your absorption is okay, essential fatty acids. And treat your fat cravings as a deficiency in essential fatty acids. I hate saying one thing, but that's the one thing. If there is one thing, that's the one thing. Essential fatty acids, vitamin A, vitamin C, and then there's certain minerals. You're only giving me three. That's not a lot, but... But I would say...
So hamburgers, french fries, and chocolate shakes, right?
Oh, gosh, Sam, I know you're kidding. That's your teasing. Absolutely not.
Well, listen, pharmacist Ben, we're out of time, but how do people get in touch with you in case they want to tune in?
Get on my radio show. I have every Sunday I do a radio show called The Bright Side. We talk about nutrition. We talk about skin. You can email me at ben@ksco.com if you want to send me an email. But listen in tomorrow from 3 to 5. Or from 2 to 4, I'm sorry. It's called The Bright Side. We talk about health. We're there. We're on KSCO every Sunday.
Okay, do you have access on the internet?
Website is getsanitas.com. G-E-T-S as in Sam, A-N as in Nancy, I-T-A-S, getsanitas.com. Listen to me on The Bright Side or send me an email, ben@ksco.com.
Okay, folks, that's this edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. We had pharmacist Ben Fuchs, compounding and confounding pharmacist Ben Fuchs, who's leads us away from cosmetics toward food and good, healthy skin. So what are you going to do for your healthy skin? Thank you for tuning in. See you all next week.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.